viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240. As I open the program to mention that we've got a situation here in coastal North Carolina that, well, is generating a lot of publicity, unfortunately, the kind that we really don't want. Close to 80, I think I'm losing count now, emergency calls over the past week, predominantly in Carteret County as a result of rip currents. And it's a situation that unfortunately is, well, as we're going to find out here in a moment, is not easily identified and, for that matter, fixed. And with that, we have joining us this afternoon Spencer Rogers, a UNCC grant. His areas of expertise include coastal construction and erosion specialist, but he is also involved in a recent study at UNCW related to the handling of rip currents and just the whole issue of, well, if you will, mapping them, if I understand that correctly. Spencer, and with that, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. Thank you for the invitation.
Do appreciate it. Let's talk about this issue of the rip currents. Of course, we're seeing the red flags, and there have been some concerns related to swimmers being caught up in them. First quick question related to rip currents. What causes them?
Rip currents have several different causes. The most common is when there's a sandbar in the offshore profile, and the waves will break on the offshore bar. When they do that, they actually pile up water between the crest of the bar and the beach, and that water at a higher elevation than the rest of the ocean looks for an easy way out, and when it finds a low spot in the sandbar, it collects behind the bar, flows towards that hole, and then is redirected in the offshore direction, creating the rip current.
Okay, now, obviously, we're talking about barriers off the ocean. In other words, it's shoaling that's off the beach that causes this, or shall we say, enhances the potential for rip currents?
Yeah, our most common rip currents are when there's an offshore sandbar,
okay,
and when wave and tide conditions are tuned just right to make the rip currents dangerous.
All right, and if you have a beach where there is no offshore barrier or shoal, does that mean that there's less of a chance or no chance of rip current?
It's less common, but there's still places and other causes of rip currents that can make them very dangerous. For instance, where there are groins or jetties or fishing piers, often those structures can cause different kinds of rip currents that may not occur on the same day as the others behind the sandbar, but they can be dangerous.
Okay. Let's talk about the types of rip currents. You were telling me there are actually two types, as I understand.
There's several different types, but the most common is when there is this low spot in the bar. So when the sandbar has this low area, waves are differentially bent and changed, and the currents develop and can become dangerous in those low spots moving in an offshore direction.
Okay. Yet, we have instances where we have no rip currents. What are the other characteristics and environmental issues that promote the whole concept of rip currents? And in the process, are they easily identified so that if somebody's visiting the beaches, they can look and say, oh, there's potential of significant, or there's potential of rip current in this location?
There are sometimes some subtle features that you can identify that tell you a rip current might be present, but on any given beach, on any given day, there are almost always rip currents. The issue is that on certain days, when the wave conditions and the shape of the beach and the tide are just right, then the velocity of those rip currents picks up, and all of a sudden they become dangerous and even life-threatening.
All right. Let's talk about then what to do, and I want to get back to your study that you did at UNCW, was it 2 years ago now, but what very quickly should a swimmer do, or anyone who's in, let's just say, for example, even somebody who's seeking to help a struggling struggling swimmer, what should they do?
Well, it's important to treat those two differently, but
okay,
the most important thing is don't panic. Understand that rip currents can exist, And at some times, they can be so fast moving offshore that even an Olympic swimmer can't keep up with it.
Wow.
So the important thing to remember is to recognize that you may be in one. If you see yourself moving offshore, the most important thing is to get out of the current as quickly as possible by swimming along the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Don't swim directly back into the rip current. It can be faster than you can swim, but swim across it and get out of that narrow current as quickly as possible.
But you have situations, as I recall our conversation earlier, where you actually have rip currents that will actually spin you out of the flow, the outflow. Am I correct?
That is the case, and that's one of the things we were studying here at UNCW. And there are some areas where there are circulation cells that are set up by the rip currents that actually hook back and come back to the beach. And we were looking at comparisons to some rip currents on the West Coast where they do that, this circulation all the time. The question we were asking was whether that's common on the East Coast and our more typical Barrier Island beaches. And what we found was that there are circulation cells that are sometimes forming where you may be able to float and get back to the beach on the top of the sandbar by just floating. Mm-hmm. But they're so irregular and unpredictable that it's just as likely, if not more likely, that the rip currents are going to eject you straight offshore in the deeper water and not get back.
Now,
so regardless of whether there's a circulation cell or not, the most important thing is to swim across the current, along the shoreline, and get out of it as quickly as possible.
We've seen stories, and we even report here on the talk station in the mornings, for example, beach reports identifying days that are highly prone to rip currents and other days that are not. Is there any characteristic that a individual can look at, or, for example, even, let's say, lifeguards, that would say, okay, we really do have, in this particular geographical location, there is a potential for rip current. Is there any indication of, like, for example, how the waves may act differently?
Yeah, there are subtle indicators. The first thing you should do is ask a lifeguard if there's one on the beach.
Right.
Because they know that 80% of their rescues are going to occur around rip currents. So they, if they're present and dangerous, they'll certainly know about it, so ask the lifeguard first. You certainly need to know how to swim if you're going to get into deeper water. And the things that you can look for are differences in the waves break as they come into the shoreline. So sometimes there will be subtle color changes where maybe the water up closest to the beach is a little muddier or dirtier,
mm-hmm.
and you see a plume of water moving offshore. You may see foam or something floating on the surface that's moving in the offshore direction at one spot on the beach across the sandbar. A common feature are these low areas in the sandbars that are darker as you look out into the surf.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be darker water. Mm-hmm. And that's usually an indication of deeper water. And where the water is collected behind the sandbar and it returns offshore, it's usually at those low spots in the sandbar. So it may not be an active, dangerous rip current where that hole in the bar is, but if the conditions become dangerous, it's likely that's the most likely place where it would occur.
You know, one thing you did say, and I want to stress the word, you used the word subtle. Quite frankly, unless you're very experienced and question for you, your students, when they were working on this at UNCW, and by the way, I'm looking at it right now on our Facebook page, and we'll give you some focus on that as well for our audience. Were the students able to say, hey, I'm looking at a situation where I'm pretty confident there's rip current at this point? Or, again, due to the subtleties of it, even they were surprised, even though they were doing their studies?
Definitely. That even in some conditions, nobody can predict rip currents,
okay.
even the most trained observers.
All right.
That we put our drifters in the surf zone behind the sandbar, and they would sit there and just do next to nothing for 10 or 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, velocities would pick up, a rip current would form for 3 or 4 minutes faster than you could swim, and all of our drifters would be ejected from the surf zone in a, a short period of time. There's no way to predict that at all.
Our guest, by the way, is Spencer Rogers of UNCC Grant. In his area of interest, in addition to coastal construction and erosion activities, that of experience associated with rip currents, and did a special study with UNCW students. Curious, Spencer, is that study still underway, or have you basically accomplished the information you were seeking?
We've done a pretty good job in the Hanover County area, and we're looking at other areas in the U.S. that are Barrier Island shorelines. We've actually got some loaned out to New Jersey Sea Grant at the moment, and we've loaned them to South Carolina as well. So far, we haven't gotten any data back from those groups, but we are still looking at other areas of the country to see how the rip currents compare in other areas.
And by the way, how does coastal North Carolina compare? And, of course, let me just focus for a moment on the Crystal Coast, Bogue Banks area. How does it compare to other coastal regions of the state and of the country?
In general, the lifeguard reports that the National Weather Service has worked on with all of the lifeguard programs in North Carolina and some other areas outside of North Carolina as well, found that the Bogue Banks area was actually one of the lower areas for rip current, dangerous rip currents in the state. And the frequency of higher risk days and reports are much higher on the east-facing beaches of, say, the Outer Banks or New Hanover County.
Okay.
Compared to Bogue Banks.
How do we compare North Carolina to other beaches to the north and south? Florida, for example, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, that area.
I think we're comparable. There are areas that have higher numbers than other areas. The Outer Banks has a pretty high frequency compared to just about any place. And I think the Barrier Island shoreline, say, from Long Island all the way down through Florida and around the Gulf of Mexico to Texas, have pretty similar rip current statistics. That it's not uncommon for specific beaches to have very bad years and certainly very bad shorter periods of days or weeks. The best indicator of predicting a bad rip current today is what happened yesterday.
If you've got, and we'll keep you much longer, Spencer Rogers again with UNCC Grant, an organization that is, you used to be part of the Department of Agriculture, is that correct?
Now we're part of NOAA. Moved around a few times.
Okay. Very important organization, which, by the way, provides this kind of service to promote UNCC Grant, the whole Sea Grant program. But, Spencer, what about extremes? We've had extreme highs, high tides, extreme low tides. Do those extremes exacerbate the opportunity for rip currents?
Those high highs and low lows will change the shape of the beach somewhat.
Okay.
But during the day, there's usually a period of the tide that is not the extreme. It's not the lowest low or the highest high. It's a fairly normal condition, more often than not, closer to low tide than a high tide. But depending on the beach and the time, that sometimes it can be the reverse. So closer to low tide has usually a little higher frequency of rip currents on most beaches. But again, really what happened yesterday and last week is a more important indicator on your beach than anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I think there is one thing I want to make sure we cover, and that's the risk to rescuers that in the North Carolina deaths, about a third of the people that have drowned have been rescuers. And we think in many cases the original victim will survive. And one of the reasons for that is the rescuer is a little better swimmer, but not a good swimmer, and they get overexerted very quickly trying to do the rescue. So one important thing for beach safety is nobody should attempt to rescue without something floating. First call a lifeguard, but if you have to go in the water to attempt to rescue, you must have something that floats, and that could be a boogie board, a surfboard, a noodle or cooler,
something,
life jacket,
yeah.
Anything that floats. And that way, if you do overexert and get in trouble, you don't become another victim yourself.
All right. And Spencer, we'll wrap it up with two things. One, we're going to be posting, and thank you for recommending this, the NOAA recommendations, the bullet points that you will be posting on our Facebook page, Viewpoints on the Talk Station. But final comment. The issue of getting caught in a rip current is to swim diagonally out of the current. Is that correct?
It's to swim parallel to the shoreline, or along the shoreline, not directly against the current.
Okay.
Don't fight it.
Right.
Get out of it as quickly as possible, and once you're outside the current, you can swim back directly to the beach.
And, of course, the big issue, don't panic.
That's for sure.
Unfortunately, it's easier said than done if you're – you know, it's interesting. I was telling you this earlier. I've never recalled being caught in a rip current. Could I have been caught in a rip current but just never known it?
There are rip currents on most beaches every single day that are so slow you wouldn't even know it.
Uh-huh.
But when the wave conditions and the tide conditions and the shape of the beach are just right,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden they can get very dangerous quickly.
Spencer Rogers with us this afternoon. Spencer, I'm going to chat with you briefly off air, but thank you very much for your time this afternoon. Have you been getting a lot of calls and interest and queries about rip currents?
For the last 39 years, yes.
Oh, I was thinking possibly this week as well, because it's been a very, well, I shouldn't say, but it's been a highly reported story. Stay with me. I'll chat with you briefly off air. Spencer Rogers with us this afternoon, UNCC grant. And by the way, that website, Spencer, is what, UNC, it was nccgrant.org? Is that right?
.org.
Right.
That's it.
NCC grant, all one word, .org. You're listening to Viewpoints.